From Judaism's perspective, art must capture what is truly sacred and glorious in human life. But to depict human beings as perfect is to miss all that the Torah proclaims about humanity and its role in serving and needing God. Welcome to 10-Minute Mitzvah Episode 3, Rembrandt's Margareta versus Idolatry. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman. This episode of 10-Minute Mitzvah is generously sponsored by Juan Mesa Friedel.
In a room filled with Rembrandts, the Dutch artist's portrait of Margareta de Geer at London's National Gallery does not immediately draw the eye. There is, after all, Rembrandt's dramatic depiction of Belshazzar's feast, the tale from the Book of Daniel, a king recoiling as an ethereal hand carves exquisite Hebrew letters on the wall. There is also Rembrandt's self-portrait at the age of 34. And then there is Margareta, an elderly woman approaching 80, sternly staring out at us. It is not the most famous Rembrandt, but it bears a remarkable story of its own, which allows us to understand what makes Rembrandt's art so special. With the onset of World War II in 1939, London anxiously awaited the air assault of the Luftwaffe. The National Gallery knew that it must seek a safe storage location for its priceless treasures. Kenneth Clark, the museum's director, proposed to the new British Prime Minister that the entire collection be moved to safety in Canada. But Churchill's response was immediate. He said, "Hide them in caves and cellars, but not one picture shall leave this island." A slate mine in Wales was selected, and there all the art in the National Gallery was secretly stored. Then, in 1941, Clark announced the acquisition of a Rembrandt, the portrait of Margareta de Geer. It was reported in the Times of London, but, given the war, the public would have no opportunity to see it. But then an art lover wrote into the Times as follows. "Because London's face is scarred and bruised these days, we need more than ever to see beautiful things. Would the trustees of the National Gallery consider whether it were not wise and well to risk one picture for exhibition each week?" And then the letter concluded with a plaintive plea. Music lovers are not denied their Beethoven, but picture lovers are denied their Rembrandts, just at a time when such beauty is most potent for good. I know the risk, but believe it would be worth it. End quote. This story is told in a fascinating excursus by Neil McGregor. And, as he further tells us, Kenneth Clark took the letter to heart and decided to show Margareta to the public. For the first time in the history of the National Gallery, only one painting was on display. And yet, turn out, the public did. It lined London's war-torn streets, and the Times of London trumpeted the good news, saying that even though only one work of art was being shown, still, quote, it was a Rembrandt, and therefore the Times added that it was, quote, of course, sufficient to draw a large crowd of those hungry for aesthetic refreshment, end quote. But here, ladies and gentlemen, is what is striking. If, as the art lover wrote in his letter, what was needed was the seeing of beautiful things, it is not immediately obvious that this desire would be satisfied by this painting. Margareta de Geer is an octogenarian. It is a poignant reflection on age, mortality, and, because her husband had passed away at the time of this painting, loneliness. One might not have immediately selected it as the ultimate artistic embodiment of beauty. But it is a beautiful painting, not despite the honesty with which the artist depicts Margareta, but because of the way he shows her. As E.H. Gombrich, in his book The Story of Art, once put it, what set Rembrandt apart is the fact that he could show us the interiority of individuals. Leonardo da Vinci may have been brilliant, Gombrich writes, but, quote, even the Mona Lisa could not always have smiled. But he adds that in Rembrandt's portraits, quote, we feel face to face with real people. We sense their warmth, their need for sympathy, and also their loneliness and their suffering, end quote. Rembrandt, in other words, shows us the beauty and complexity of the human soul, and Margareta's portrait allows the fierceness of her spirit to shine through. As Simon Schama has stressed, whereas Vermeer's beautiful paintings contain few elderly, infirm individuals or other individuals struggling with other aspects of life that might impact their appearance, Rembrandt saw these attributes, quote, not as compromising the moral nobility of his sitters, but as describing it. In his sympathetic eye, there was no grotesque, end quote. It is with this in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that we may reflect today on mitzvahs that relate to Judaism's approach to the image. That there is tension at times between the Torah and the visual medium is quite clear. Thus, the prohibitive mitzvah appearing in the Decalogue, Exodus chapter 20, verse 4. Lo ta'ase lecha pesel v'chol tmuna asher b'shamayim mimal v'asher ba'aretz mitachat v'asher b'mayim mitachat la'aretz. Thou shalt not make for thyself any carved idol or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down to them nor serve them. Here, the prohibition relates to making any image for the purpose of worship. It is the prohibition of idolatry. But after the Decalogue, very soon after, another prohibition appears, which seems repetitive and redundant. It is Exodus 20, verse 20. You shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall you make for yourselves gods of gold. Ostensibly, this is a repetition of what was said in the Ten Commandments, but for the rabbis, this verse prohibits Jews from making three-dimensional sculptures of the human form, even if not for the purposes of worship. To put it slightly differently, sculptures of human beings are called gods of gold and silver because to sculpt a human being is to divinize the human being. As we shall further discuss in other episodes, Judaism rejects not all images and not all artistic endeavors. On the contrary, but it does reject those that give in to the pagan impulse that bestow divinity to nature, or perhaps even more problematically, to human beings. This is not because human beings are of no consequence. On the contrary, rather, what Judaism emphasizes is what Rembrandt understood, that the fragility and finitude of human life is the very source of its virtues, virtues such as courage and hope, and therefore it is also the very source of its beauty. From Judaism's perspective, art must capture what is truly sacred and glorious in human life. But to depict human beings as perfect is to miss all that the Torah proclaims about humanity and its role in serving and needing God. We can therefore understand why, according to some Jewish legal decisors, when imperfections intrude, then the creation of forms depicting human beings may no longer apply. Some medieval authorities argued that it is only the complete human form that ought not to be sculpted or created, while others stressed that when imperfections are deliberately added, then, in certain situations, the prohibition may also not apply. Delineating the details of this law is beyond the scope of our podcast, but it is worth noting in the context of the tale we have told about Margareta de Gier, a fascinating conversation recorded by a Jewish artist by the name of Melnikoff with the great Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Cook, chief rabbi of the Holy Land. Melnikoff writes, "One day I talked to the late Rabbi Cook about this prohibition. I asked him whether it is true that somewhere in our holy commentaries there is a passage which says that under certain conditions sculpture is allowed to be done by Jews. The rabbi knitted his brows. Let me see," he was saying to himself. A few moments later, he brought down huge gemaroth, Talmuds, from the shelves. He piled them on the table. He opened up one after another, moving his delicate fingers along the lines of the holy script as he read. And then Melnikoff adds, "At last he stood up triumphantly. Here it is," he said. "Now listen to what our sages say about your question." I don't remember the exact wording he quoted, Melnikoff writes, but it was something like this. "Our sages say," he read out, "that it is allowed to Jews to make images if they are done imperfectly and maimed." This made me laugh. "Why are you laughing?" he asked. "Because my work is far from being perfect." Now it was his turn to laugh. He was all kindness. At that moment, according to Melnikoff, Rabbi Cook related a remarkable experience about his time in London. Quote, "When I lived in London, I used to visit the National Gallery, and my favorite pictures were those of Rembrandt. I really think that Rembrandt was a tzaddik." And then, according to Melnikoff, Rabbi Cook added that, quote, "the light in his pictures is the very light that God created on Genesis Day," end quote. Of what light is Rabbi Cook speaking? Rabbi Sachs, I think, was correct when he interpreted Rabbi Cook as referring to the fact that Rembrandt did not seek to portray only external beauty. He did not seek to divinize men and women, but to show the inner light of human beings that is within. To show human beings as imperfect and striving in mortal life is to highlight their true beauty. If this is the case, then the tale of Margareta de Gier emerges as more than an interesting episode. The lines of Londoners, eager and anxious to see Margareta during World War II, reflected all that Britain was fighting against. Rembrandt allows us to see the magnificence of the human being, and England faced an evil that sought to dehumanize so many in the name of its own twisted notion of aesthetics and beauty. Neil McGregor calls Margareta a quote-unquote war heroine, and we can see Rembrandt's approach to the image not only as a resonant symbol of the battle for Western civilization during World War II, but also as a reminder that when we do not divinize human beings, we can discover the true beauty that lies within all of us. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.